Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The race for Congress in New York's 22nd District is widely expected to be one of the most competitive in the country. The seat is currently held by Republican Claudia Tenney, who is finishing her first term. Joining me on the program today is Assemblyman Anthony Brindisi, the Democratic challenger. Assemblyman Brindisi represents the 119th State Assembly District, and he has a background as a lawyer. The 22nd Congressional District covers all of Madison, Oneida, Cortland, and Shenango counties, and portions of Oswego, Broome, Herkimer, and Tioga counties. Note that I will also invite Congresswoman Tenney to appear on the program, and I hope to have that conversation at a later date. But for now, Assemblyman Brindisi, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Grant. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you are the challenger, so yes. Let's start by asking you to make a brief case against the incumbent. Why should Congresswoman Tenney not be reelected?
Well, I'd like to make a brief case as to why I should be elected, because I think that's one thing that a lot of candidates get caught up from time to time, is why we should not vote for the other person but not really give them a good enough reason to vote for us. And this is a very important election in our time in this country. It's an important election for me. And what I want people to know is that the reason I decided to run for Congress in the first place is because I'm pretty sick and tired of both sides, the extremes on both sides driving the conversation down in Washington. We've seen it recently with this farm bill that failed in the House of Representatives because the extremes overtook the conversation and derailed that farm bill, which is very important for many dairy farmers here in New York State and farmers across the board. But I want people to know that I'm someone during my time in the Assembly who has been a very independent voice, who has not been afraid to speak up against leaders within my own party, someone who has gotten results done for the region that I represent currently in the State Assembly, and someone who's shown that I can reach across the aisle to really get things done. So that's why I decided to run for Congress. Unfortunately, I think my opponent represents the other side, which is the side where nothing's getting done, contributes to the partisan bickering that's happening in Washington. And what people want most from their elected representatives, they don't care if they're a Democrat or Republican, but at the end of the day, after the election is finished, go to work and get things done for the people that put you there.
You mentioned that farm bill. I want to come back to that in just a minute, because there were some votes against the farm bill that were driven by other concerns.
Sure.
I'm curious to get your reaction to that. But let's stick with your election here, your campaign here. What significant votes then has Congresswoman Tenney taken that, mm-hmm. that you would have voted differently on, the most important ones?
The most important one probably is the health care vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which I believe was the wrong decision on her part. And not only did she vote in favor of repealing the Affordable Care Act, she took a celebratory bus over to the White House afterwards and gleefully cheered, taking pictures of herself after a vote that potentially could have taken health care away from 23 million Americans. In this congressional district in upstate New York, we have many rural communities, many rural hospitals, people who have benefited from Medicaid expansion who would have been very harmed by that repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Now, I believe that the Affordable Care Act does need fixing, but the solution to me is not raising premiums on people with pre-existing conditions and kicking others off of their health insurance. That's one vote. The other votes that she has taken, the tax bill, which we're finding is not having the desired impact that she had promised. Many people are still seeing stagnant wages at a time when all their expenses continue to rise. We're seeing the real beneficiaries, no matter what independent study you're looking at nowadays, are the folks down on Wall Street, the big mega corporations who are benefiting from this tax bill, or something as simple like internet privacy, which we're thinking about more and more these days. She voted for a bill that essentially rolls back many of the regulations that were put in place under the Obama administration to prevent internet service providers from taking your personal information and selling it to third-party vendors for advertising purposes. She voted to repeal those regulations and then took money from those same internet service providers and telecommunications giants that were pushing that bill. So she's not speaking on behalf of the people in this congressional district. In my opinion, she's speaking on the special interests that are funding her campaign and the folks down on Wall Street.
You mentioned the farm bill at the outset as an example of a casualty of the extremes. I believe, though, that Representative Katko here in the 24th District also voted against that. And his rationale for doing so was the change in the food stamp program. So he was coming at this and voting against it out of what one might argue relative to his party was more moderate concerns. Can you break that down?
Sure. The changes, and that's why I think you saw a lot of representatives in the middle vote against that particular bill because of changes to the food assistance program that, quite frankly, would harm disproportionately older adults, senior citizens, veterans, single women. Really, we're all, I would say that most people are probably in favor of having some work restrictions on receiving public assistance, but that was a cruel and heartless attempt to try and take away benefits from the most vulnerable citizens in our state and in our country. And secondly, the other casualty in this farm bill really is trying to tie immigration policy to a farm bill. That's something that I believe, and I think most Americans believe, that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be fixed. It doesn't need to be fixed in the context of a farm bill. It should be done separately on standalone legislation. And I'm someone who believes that we need to have a very tough but fair immigration policy in this country where we are not losing our core values here in this country as a nation of immigrants, just like my grandparents and many others who came to this country seeking a better life. We want to make sure that folks who are here or folks who want to come here are playing by the rules and paying taxes and becoming citizens, and we should be putting those folks on a pathway to citizenship, not restricting our borders that way.
Let me ask you one more question about the incumbent, and then we'll talk more about some of your positions here. But is there anything in Congresswoman Tenney's tenure in her first term that you think she did well or she's doing well?
It's hard to point out anything, really, to be honest with you. She has not been very receptive to people who may have a differing opinion than she does. She does not hold town hall meetings. To me, the number one quality of a representative is to be a good listener. There's no way you can do an effective job as a representative in Washington if you're not listening to the people back home. And she not only does not listen to people back home, she offends half the population by making statements like all these mass shootings end up being committed by Democrats, or calling Democrats un-American because they didn't stand for the president during the State of the Union, or saying that domestic violence is not a crime of character in response to the Rob Porter situation in the White House. These are offensive statements. They get us a lot of national attention in the 22nd District, attention that I don't think we want to be known for, having a representative who says all kinds of controversial things. We want a representative who's going to go to work for us, who's going to stand up and work with the president when they can benefit their district, and who's going to stand up and disagree with the president and be vocal in their disagreements with the president when it harms the people back home. She's failed to exhibit any of that.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Assemblyman Anthony Brandisi, Democratic candidate for Congress in New York's 22nd District. You announced earlier this month that you would not support Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker.
Correct.
Should the Democrats take control of the House in the midterm elections. Now, that is the case, even though she's directed a considerable amount of resources to your election. And some other Democrats in competitive districts are doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. First of all, could you just briefly explain that decision?
Well, it's a decision that I made because when I look at the reasons I'm running for Congress, I'm running for Congress because I want to bring new ideas, change to Washington, and I think we should be looking forward. It's not meant to disrespect her or her past leadership. I just think it's time for new leadership on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly. And we're very proud that we are running a campaign here where we're not taking any corporate PAC money in this election. That puts us at somewhat of a disadvantage in terms of fundraising, but we've been very fortunate to actually out-fundraise the opponent in this race, and doing that with the strength of individual contributions. There was a report that was put out recently that showed our campaign, of all the congressional campaigns of incumbents and challengers in the country, our campaign here is actually in the top 20 in the whole nation in terms of individual small-dollar donations. So I believe that this is a people-powered campaign, and we're going to continue to drive the message home of the people into November.
With the Nancy Pelosi issue, though, just to follow up, are there any significant differences in the policy positions that you have and she has? Could you give me some examples of where you differ from her?
I think it's more of an overall direction of the party nationally. And people always will ask me, are you running on the national Democratic message? Are you running on your own message? I always tell folks, I'm running on my own message. You know, whatever happens nationally, I'm not interested in. What I'm interested in are the things that I'm hearing at town hall meetings, and I've been doing several of them across the district. It's people's health care and their fear of losing health care. It's taxes and jobs. It's the opioid crisis. So one thing that I have been very critical of the Democratic Party as a whole in recent years is I believe that they have done a poor job of reaching out to parts of this country, particularly places like the 22nd District, the rural areas of our country, or the Rust Belt areas of our country, to show what we stand for. And that's something that I'm doing right now, is going to every town, every village, every city in this congressional district to tell people, here's where I stand on issues like health care. Here's where I stand on issues like tax reform and jobs. And I'm not interested in what the National Party is talking about in Washington. They can craft their own message. But my message is based on what I'm hearing from town hall meetings and the voters in this district.
Well, give me a specific example. You've framed your campaign in part as a moderate. You're a moderate in the Democratic Party. I think you've said that several points, and you're kind of intimating that here. Mm-hmm. So give me a specific example of an important policy position where you distinguish yourself as a moderate as opposed to whatever this vision is of a liberal Democrat.
Sure. Well, let's talk about something like gun violence.
Okay.
Gun violence is on everyone's minds these days. I'm someone who is very supportive of the Second Amendment and people's right to bear arms for hunting purposes or recreational purposes or to protect themselves in their home. But I think that we sometimes get caught up in this. Either you're a Second Amendment supporter or you're on the other side of more gun reform legislation, and there's no middle ground. And that's a problem that I see happening in Washington right now. I'm someone who firmly believes that you can be a supporter of the Second Amendment and also support some common sense reforms to try and keep guns and firearms out of the hands of criminals, out of the hands of the violently mentally ill, out of the hands of people who are committing domestic abuse. And the one area that I would focus on that nothing seems to be happening in Washington over is the issue of expanded background checks. You know, we have universal background checks here in New York State. Most of the gun violence that happens in New York actually happens with firearms that are purchased legally in states down south that have very lax background check laws, and then those guns are then smuggled and sold illegally in New York State and used for gun violence. There's no reason why we should not have expanded background checks to cover commercial sales of firearms in all states. Is that going to solve the problem altogether? No, but it's going to make a significant impact on trying to cut down on the gun violence that we're seeing in this country.
Which kinds of sales are you referring to there? Because you use the word commercial sales. And
yep.
It's my understanding that commercial sales are already subject to background checks. It's individual private sales, which can happen at a gun show or could happen just between two individuals finding each other through a classified ad or whatever, depending on the state. So what type – tell me more specifically where you want to draw that line, because the devil is in the details,
sure,
as you know, with this issue.
Yeah. It's closing the gun show loopholes. It's closing Internet sales, not going through background checks over Internet sales. There are certain private sales, particularly among family members, that I think should be exempt when you're passing along heirlooms from grandfather to grandson, things like that. But in terms of the gun shows and the Internet sales, I think we can have expanded background checks to try and prevent some of the sales that we're seeing done that way.
And if I want to buy your shotgun and you and I just want to make that exchange, then there should be a background check for that?
Sure. If it's a bipartisan piece of legislation that is going to help cut down on gun violence, I'm going to support it no matter what it is.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Assemblyman Anthony Brindisi. He's a Democrat challenging incumbent Republican Claudia Tenney for Congress in New York's 22nd District. On this issue, again, of where you stand relative to other political actors, and so people can get a better sense of you and your positions, are there issues that you see yourself partnering with Republicans to work on? You mentioned before the gun control issue. I'm guessing you're not going to find a lot of Republican help there, but are there other issues that you could really imagine yourself in Congress working with Republicans on?
Absolutely. I always say that any major piece of legislation that we've seen throughout the course of history in this country has enjoyed bipartisan support. So whether we're talking about tax reform, whether we're talking about fixing the Affordable Care Act, whether we're talking about infrastructure or helping to combat the opioid crisis, you need some bipartisan support. Look at the Affordable Care Act. I think that there are some common sense ideas on both sides of the aisle to help try and drive down high premiums under the Affordable Care Act. What we saw under the repeal bill is a bill to scrap the system altogether and kick a lot of people off their health insurance. I don't think that's the right way to go. On issues like trade, I think the president is on the right track by doing something to address the trade imbalance that we're facing with countries like China, and more can be done in a bipartisan way to address that on issues like the opioid crisis and driving down prescription drug costs. I think the president's on the right track trying to address the high cost of prescription drugs. However, I don't necessarily agree with his ideas to fix that. I liked more what he was saying during the campaign when he was talking about allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices or to put caps on drug prices. That seemed to have fallen off the table. Infrastructure is another area that he has made a focus of his presidency. I don't necessarily agree with the way he's going about an infrastructure package by basically kicking the cost over to states and local governments who are pretty can't really meet those costs right now. It should be back to where there's a true partnership between the federal government and local and state governments on infrastructure package, which is something that we desperately need, especially in upstate New York with so many crumbling roads and bridges and sewer systems. So there's areas where I want to find compromise. That's something I've always tried to do in the assembly, working with my state senator, who's a Republican, to really find areas where we can agree that will benefit our district. And that's something that I'm going to do when I get to Washington, looking for other representatives who represent New York State or other parts of the country that have similar interests to the 22nd District, and then just going to talk to them, to listen to what their concerns are, to start building that level of trust and hopefully finding partnerships to get things done.
Do you have specific members of Congress in mind now in terms of who you might reach out to on the other side of the aisle?
Sure. I think there's a number of members here in New York State that I would reach out to, whether it's in the North Country or here in the Syracuse area. I'm going to look for other members. I know we have elections coming up, so the faces may change after November, but particularly in upstate New York, we have to band together and put party differences aside, because we're an area that's been hurt over the years, and we need to work together if we're going to start building this place back.
Let me come back to the gun issue again. There was something there that I wanted to ask you. The Congresswoman has been a longtime and vocal gun rights supporter, and she's been endorsed by the union that represents the Remington Arms workers. And Remington, of course, is in the 22nd District. So what would you say to those workers if you could get them to reconsider that decision? I mean, you know, again, this is an issue that really does seem to slice people through pretty deeply.
And this is a union that I've always enjoyed support from in the past during my assembly races, and still enjoy the support of many workers at Remington Arms in this congressional race. But what I would say to them is on the issue of firearms, I'm not looking to take anyone's firearms away. My opponent's looking to take your union away. When it comes down to labor rights and health care and pension rights, it's a clear difference between where my opponent stands and where I stand. And that's why I'm being supported by the AFL-CIO and many other labor organizations in the private sector, in the public sector, in this congressional campaign, because I'm someone who has stood up for labor since I've been way back to my days when I was on the school board in the city of Utica, and we negotiated with our building trades a $180 million project labor agreement for a project that now is on time, on budget, using all local workforce, or standing on the picket line with communication workers or healthcare workers, or standing up for our public sector against unfair wages, standing with our private sector, trying to strengthen pensions. That's something that I've always done and what I'm going to continue to do throughout the course of this campaign and when I'm in Congress is standing there for labor, because I quite frankly believe that labor is under attack right now in this country, especially down in Washington, with Supreme Court decisions and other kinds of legislation that's coming out of the House of Representatives that want to scale back the ability of workers to collectively bargain. And we need more Democrats, frankly, to stand up and actually stand on the side of labor to make sure that the middle class and working individuals are protected.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Democratic candidate for Congress, Anthony Brandisi. So you mentioned before that the faces may change when you were thinking about people you might work with. It is obviously quite possible at this point that Democrats could retake control of the House in the midterms, but it's not a certainty, and as we know in elections, you never know. So if they don't, if the Democrats don't retake control, why would the citizens in the 22nd district be better off with a freshman member of the minority party representing them in Congress?
Well, whatever happens, whether the Democrats take control or whether the Republicans maintain control, I think one thing that is clear is that there are going to be very slim majorities on either side of the aisle. And we are going to need those folks who are actually in the middle, the problem solvers, the people who can get things done and reach across the aisle, are going to play an even greater role in shaping policy in this country after the 2018 elections. And I'm someone who's firmly rooted in that middle area, who's able to work across the aisle. So whether I'm a Democrat doesn't matter, but I'm going to be someone who is going to be hopefully needed to get things done. So an effective representative can do the job, whether they're in the majority or minority. And I think I've shown during my time, sometimes I'm in even though I'm in the Democratic Party in the Assembly, sometimes I'm in the minority of voices on particular issues. But I've still been able to stand up and speak my mind and actually get results for the people that I represent in the Assembly right now.
Question or two about the campaign itself. I wonder how much this election might turn on personality, especially among the slice of voters, and it's becoming ever smaller of a slice, who are not already committed on the basis of party. I mean,
sure,
you're going to have a lot of people in your district are either going to vote for you or your opponent just on the basis of the party, and that's just a fact. But there is that small group in the middle. Even among Republicans, I think it's fair to say the incumbent has a reputation for being pretty politically assertive. And defined in large part often by the conflicts that she has. I was wondering whether you are deliberately trying to set yourself up as some sort of contrast to that style, just based on some of the things I've read.
It's not deliberate. It's just who I am. You know, I've always tried to be someone who doesn't react right away, who's going to listen to both sides of an issue and try and formulate opinion after hearing both sides of a debate and then trying to make a decision based upon what I think is in the best interest of people that I represent. You know, she has alienated large segments of her constituency. And right now, I think what we need in Washington are people who can actually listen and achieve results, not offend people or make controversial statements. I am very proud to be supported by our former Congressman Richard Hanna in this campaign, and he is someone who I believe has shown a real independent streak throughout his time in Congress, something that I would like to model, because that's what this area wants. This is a district that no doubt voted for Donald Trump overwhelmingly, but in 2012 it's a district that went almost evenly between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Folks are sick and tired of politics as usual in Washington, and the reason we have politics as usual in Washington is because of so much money and corporate influence over politics. By me taking a stance in this election not to accept corporate PAC money, I think that puts me in an area where I don't have to be beholden to those special interests. Where if you look at who is funding my opponent's campaign, it's the financial services industry. And that leads her to vote for bills that will scale back regulations that were put in place to try and prevent the big banks and Wall Street from making risky bets with our pensions and our 401ks. It's the telecommunications industry and the internet service providers. And what do they get from their investment to her? They get more lax privacy regulations, which allows them to make more money. Right now, I'm engaged in this battle with a cable provider here in New York State, who I will remain nameless. But we have seen in parts of New York 40% increases in people's cable bills. That's because at the federal level and at the state, the regulators have allowed these mega mergers of these companies. And what do the people get for it? They get less competition, they get greater price, and they get worse service. And I'm someone who has been very vocal in the last few weeks speaking against this cable provider, even though they're going to be covering me in this election because they have news as well. But I don't care because I know that that's the right thing to do for my constituents is to speak out against these mega mergers because that's the real concern in this election is who's going to be there fighting for them, for the people, not those corporate special interests who are flush with cash and flush with lobbyists representing their interests in Washington.
We've only got about a minute left, but I want to squeeze a couple questions in to give our listeners just at least a quick sense of where your ideas may be coming from. First of all, and again, these have to be very short answers. Are there any books that have been most influential to you in the development of your political and policy thinking?
Oh, boy. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I could think of a recent book that I read regarding the immigrant experience of refugees here in upstate New York, which is something that if you're familiar with Utica and our immigrant and refugee experience, you know that Utica has been nicknamed the town that loves refugees. And having such a personal connection to my immigrant grandparents who came to this country, who worked hard and really helped shape the future generations of our family to do what we're doing right now. That book certainly has had a major impact.
And the title was?
It was about the Bosnian experience, and I'm going to miss the name now, but it was given to me by a Bosnian immigrant who resettled into the Rochester area. And, of course, the name is escaping me.
It'll
right
come
now.
Back to you. Let me ask the second question, and then you can squeeze the other one in. We've only got about 10 seconds. What living political figure do you most admire?
Living political figure. Oh, boy.
This is kind of like your lightning round if we were doing a debate.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's a tough one.
But you got to answer it right now.
That's a tough one. I have a lot of respect for the former president, Barack Obama.
We'll have to leave it there.
Right.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Right.
That was Assemblyman and Democratic congressional candidate Anthony Brindisi. Assemblyman Brindisi, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
You got it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.